We'll start here in a couple of minutes, but just want to give everybody an overview of what this talk is about. Going to be discussing all sorts of things that can go wrong with Windows deployments, specifically targeted for Windows 8.1, but really this could go almost any operating system, 8.1, Windows 7, and that sort of thing. But the subtitle of this talk is Houston, we have a problem. You know, we're in Houston, always wanted to use that line. But we'll get started here in a minute. Let's see. Actually, probably good. Probably start right about now. Just give a background of who I am. My name is Keith Garner. I guess I'm an MVP now. But I have been working in and around Microsoft way too long, since about 94, 95. Working on all sorts of different areas in the Windows product groups, testing, program management, sales, support, development, program management, you name it. But it's been my real privilege that since 2006, I've been working as a developer for the Microsoft Deployment Toolkit, it's been quite a pleasure, a real roller coaster ride. Started off just some guy doing programming, and now I'm here talking about this. But so overall, this is just going to be a quick discussion about the standard problems that we have in Windows. One of the jobs I did the year before, I helped architect Microsoft's own internal rollout of Windows 8. To the own corporate campus using MDT, both Light Touch and Zero Touch, with kind of a combination thereof. So I got to work closely with the Windows product group teams as that was rolling out. What are you guys talking about with this start menu, start the screen thing? How do we fix this? That was always fun. That was some of the first builds around that and trying to come up with solutions to work around that. But this is going to be talking about kind of deployments in depth. Let's go on here. FYI, that's my deploymentlive.com site at the bottom. It looks just like a generic site right now, any consultants that you go to, that you wonder how big that company actually is, and right now it's just me, so that's who I am. why is this important? When you're deploying Windows, rolling it out to a new company, what could possibly go wrong? Houston, we have a problem. The Windows deployment is big. It is complex. We are literally touching all the operating system files. We're updating all the drivers. We're installing service packs, updating applications. Hopefully you're doing it with, if a large organization, you have something like Configuration Manager where you're doing this remotely, but maybe you're not on site, so what happens if things go wrong on a machine that's not even in your building, in your city, in your state, in your country? How do we remotely diagnose what's going wrong? I mean, what could possibly go wrong? There are so many different components, parts, pieces. I had one person, my old manager at Microsoft, used to tell me that MDT was designed to make all these individual Windows components appear as if they were designed to work together. And Configuration Manager is kind of the same way, trying to take all these parts like WinPE, the Windows System Imaging Manager, components like USMT. USMT kind of is produced by the Windows group, but how exactly does it get plugged in? You have to run it manually. How do you add these in? MDT and Configuration Manager OSD deployment were designed to help make sure that these components all seamlessly work together, that there's a task sequence, that we're running them in order in the right places. But that means that all these individual components may or may not have been designed to work together, or how do we collect the logs or debugging information? What could possibly go wrong? Well, a lot of stuff, a lot of different pieces here. Again, a little bit of a recap here for those of you. This talk is kind of designed for kind of the almost all different types of Windows deployments, but really kind of focused on more of the Windows side. You know, of course, you can come in and develop your own third-party tools. Everybody, of course, who's using Windows 7, Windows 8.1 should be using the core, the AIK or the ADK tools to help deploy, manage, use WinPE to boot up to a pre-installation environment and kick it off that way. You could also add on components like Windows WDS, deployment services, as a service to roll out your images if you're running in a pretty standard environment. In fact, that's a valid scenario for a lot of people. I have one machine, and only one make and model, and only one kind of image. The applications are fixed. This goes out to a call center, and that's all we're using. You know, do we really need to add more high-level tools like Configuration Manager or MDT? Nah, just slap it together and on all the machines and ready to go. That may be a valid scenario in some cases. But then you get into adding on to more features with MDT, and then, of course, complete control with Configuration Manager. There are all sorts of errors that can happen during phases of installation during Windows. Some of them are kind of what you might see with MDT, some of them Configuration Manager. Gosh, I hate that one where we get the error recovery, or you know, the boot configuration's bad, the OS doesn't want to even start up, oh no, that's a problem. And my favorite, inaccessible boot device, STOP7B. These are all kind of the errors you can expect on any particular rollout of any particular environment. I do like the, or I don't know if I like it, the new Windows 8.0 blue screen of death, BSOD. They had that little frowny face off to the side. Is that supposed to look, supposed to make error bug screens seem more friendly to people? They're already kind of pretty scary as it is. Well, as you continue going on and you encounter errors all from all different sort of systems, I've been spending a lot of time, for example, lately on the TechNet MDT Microsoft Deployment Toolkit site where people will post errors from all sorts of different places. And you find actually people from all sorts of experience levels, from guys who hadn't used MDT before yesterday, to people who are very, very experienced. They're trying to do very big customizations, hard customizations, and people who need really a lot of help. But the first thing that happens when people will encounter most standard errors are, first thing we ask is, what about the logs? And depending on the scenario and where they are in the installation process, what the description of the error, then we're going to ask for logs in this case. I must admit, I'm pretty happy that at least with Windows deployment and Configuration Manager and MDT, all the teams have done a very good job of when we're in a particular point and there is an error, we usually try to write information to a log file somewhere that can be read later and interpreted and hopefully analyzed to understand what the actual root cause was. I can usually take a look at a log and probably about 50% of the time I can narrow it down to, oh, that line, that's what we're doing, oh, this was user error, or no, this is actual bug in the product, and that sort of thing. Probably the greatest tool out there is CMTrace. And for how many of you have used CMTrace out there? Great, fantastic. But for those of you who didn't raise up your hand, I do need to pitch this because this is probably one of the biggest single time savers out there. CMTrace is a tool that was produced by the Configuration Manager team, and it's kind of designed to handle most of the Configuration Manager logs out there, which are in a proprietary format, which are kind of hard to read. Actually, let's go ahead and do a first demo here and actually download this thing. I have the demo machine here, and might as well install the Configuration Manager Toolkit on this presentation machine. Let's go ahead and install that. Again, it is available through Configuration Manager, but the tool is also available with the Configuration Manager Toolkit. Let's try to run that. Oh, that's pretty quick. So go into any website, type in bing.com, Configuration Manager Toolkit right there, available for download. Let's go ahead and run that. Next, are you sure? Are you really, really sure? Are you really, really, really sure? That'll run. When it gets installed on the local hard disk under Program Files, there should be a Yes, I'm really, really, really sure. Great. Refresh. Nope. Is it x86? There it is. Configuration Manager Toolkit. There are some server tools available that for help there, but what we're really interested in is this CM Trace tool. Go ahead and start it up. The first thing I want to ask you to do, do you want to associate .log files with the Configuration Manager Toolkit? Right now, if you were to go into any particular .log file, so if I have here on the desktop, I have a couple of log files. If I open them up, it'll just open up a notepad, which is kind of the default action. But if we specify yes, I'm going to do this. If we specify yes, now if we open up a log file, it should also be available in the Configuration Manager Trace tool. So go ahead and start that up. Is this running in 64-bit mode? So another thing about Configuration Manager Toolkit, about the Trace tool, is that there are two different versions. There's a 32-bit version of the Trace tool and a 64-bit version of the Trace tool. But if we went into the installation folder, we can see that they only installed one. Where's the other version? They're doing a Mark Rusinovich kind of a trick here. Mark Rusinovich does this on a lot of his tools. I don't know if you ever noticed this on the website. If you go run some of his debugging tools on a 64-bit machine, he'll only distribute one binary file. And then if you double-click on it, it detects, oh, wait a minute, this is a 64-bit version. I'm going to embed the 64-bit version in the 32-bit version, extract it out, and run it from there. So I wonder, I think this is a 64-bit machine. Let's see if there is, let's open up another window. Let's go into temp. Oops. Hold down the shift key. Let's see, is there, was it this one? Control paste, control V. Let's rename that as, Trace 64.exe. Yes, I really want to change it. There it is. So the trick is that what happens is that when you run the 32-bit version on a 64-bit machine, it will create a temporary file in the temporary directory. Go ahead and clean out the temporary directory first, run the program in 32-bit mode. It should extract out the 64-bit version. You should be able to see it. Why would you want to do that? One of the things I do when I'm creating my WinPE images is I usually try to copy a version of CMTrace to WinPE so that I can use it. But WinPE doesn't have a WoW 64 emulator, so it can't run. If you're running the 64-bit version of WinPE, you can't run the 32-bit version of CMTrace, so you have to find that 64-bit version. So just to let you know about that. What are some other kind of cool tools about CMTrace? For those of you who do come across errors on a regular basis, they do have this error lookup tool. So if you type in a number like 2, file can't be found, or type in a random number, 2, 3, 4, 5. What is that? Oop, error not found. How about 2, 3, 4? More data is available. So all those weird errors. In fact, I wonder if it does hex. Let's see that. 0x7b. It does do hex. That's good. So anytime you're running across all those wonderful error codes in Windows and a log file and you're wondering, what's this? You could, of course, go out to Bing or Google or do your favorite web search and do a search there, but it is usually also a quick tool. I will also give another pitch to another program that I do like, and that is the error.exe tool. Let's start that up here. Desktop, demos. It's this err.exe tool. This is also available for download off of Microsoft.com. I think it's the Exchange Error Lookup Tool. What is this called again? Err.exe tool. Yeah, Microsoft Exchange Error Lookup code. And what that does is that also will print out some debugging information. So 0x7b, I've had some spaces here for the parameters. So that will also go out and search through So this tool has actually compiled a list of several different sources. They've went out to WinAir, Windows SQL Division, some other sources, and they've created a database of all these error tools. I find this is usually one of my favorite places to go to, and if I do get questions in an email or on a blog post, this is the first tool I'll look for. In fact, in this case, when I went to the CMTrace tool, CMTrace tool only gave me one name, which was an invalid name, but here it gives me several possible choices. Error code 7B is a bug check for inaccessible boot device, which happens quite a bit during installations if you don't have the correct device driver for storage driver on your machine. So that's a good find. And let's see. One other good thing about the Trace tool. Let me actually do this now as well. This is kind of a cool tool. CD, desktop, demos, echo, hello, world, out.log. So I created a file called out.log, start, out.log. So here is Configuration Manager Trace tool. And it is displaying the text in the background. But if I was to, for example, write out again to this log file, you could see as I write out the log file, the CMTrace tool is monitoring the log file and staying up to date. So I've seen a lot of people use this. They'll run it in the background and watch as the errors are happening in here, or point off to a file over the network and watch that as that continues running. So otherwise, if you're running this Notepad, you may have to open up the log file and see what the error is. But if it's running in the background, you have to close out Notepad, reopen it up, and evaluate that way. But that's one of the advantages of the CMTrace tool, is that it will monitor in the background. One of the big limitations of CMTrace, the last point there is kind of important. Null characters in a log file causes weird problems. In fact, CMTrace treats that as the very, very end of the file. So if you do have text after that, if you have log files that do output a null character at some point during the log file, CMTrace will ignore the rest of the log file. So that is kind of an error. I have come across cases where I'm reading the log file and nope, this is fine to me. This looks great. It ended and it's done. No, there was a null in there somewhere, and the rest of the log file contained the real error of what the problem was. Oh dear, that was the problem. What the problem was. Again, with Windows. Windows does a very good job of trying to keep track of everything, all the components will write to the log file. But even within Windows itself, there are many different places where log files exist. Each subcomponent, again, will have different locations of where they're located. Let me go back. And knowing where to look for in each scenario is very important. One last point using MDT about log files. If you're not already doing that with at least MDT with LightTouch, one of the things I highly recommend, and this is very important, is to use SL Share, which is a property available in LightTouch. What that does is that says, hey, at the end of the installation, when you're all said and done at the final dialog box, it says we're finished here. Copy a lot of relevant logs to the share of your choice. This worked out really great in some of our early testing when things were really, really breaking. For the Microsoft own IT department, we had an entire lab. I just walked up and actually all the machines in the lab were on power switches, so we could send network to the command to the power network switches and all the machines would turn on. I had the Pixie server configured to auto boot because it was an isolated network, and all of the WinPE files were, the MDT files were configured to auto start a particular task sequence. So half the machines would run our 32-bit version, the other half would run the 64-bit version. Run a complete installation and shut down. At the end, the logs would get loaded up. So at night, I think I fixed everything. Let's kick off an installation, come back in the morning, and I'd have a directory full of logs. And I could use tricks like a grep or a findster to find all the errors on all the machines and see how we're doing. oh gosh, we have 80% error rate, that's not good. Or, but usually most of the cases were scenarios where we're trying to find drivers that were missing, and so I wrote a script to log all the cases of the missing drivers. So great, I could load all the machines, see how the drivers are doing, and in the morning I could find out with across about, I think it was 100 different, no, probably about 50 different machines, both x86 and x64. We could find out what the driver status was, and we could isolate on those machines that really had problems. Luckily, the advantage of using a modern operating system like Windows 8 is that a lot of the slightly older machines had in-box driver support anyway, so we were lucky there. Another thing that MDT does support is the ability for monitoring. There's a service that can run on the MDT console, and you can configure your machine to automatically read as the task sequence is proceeding. It will send a periodic updates to this web service and say, I am at this point, I'm at that point, I am doing an installation, I am back in the full OS, I am running applications, I am rebooting, I am doing this. And it'll give you a progress and status if you want to do that. But for me, usually if I kick off an installation, I went home at night. And as a last resort, SL Shard Dynamic Logging. I apologize, I helped implement this in MDT years ago, and please only use this as a last resort. What this does is it says, anytime you write to the log file locally on the machine, also write it to somewhere else. And that could be over the network or some other location you specify. If it's over the network, and you don't have a network, it could get into some odd locations, odd scenarios of feedback loops there. It could also severely slow down your machine. So really, only if you get to a point where I have no idea why this is doing this, this is causing some weird errors on my machine, I gotta turn on SL Shared Dynamic Logging for this one particular scenario. Yeah, go ahead and use it. But for generic usage, just performance characteristics alone, I would kind of recommend not using that. So let's talk about some of the different types, classes of log files. Within Windows setup itself, probably the most important classification of log files are what I call Panther logs. And Panther logs are, Panther was the code name used to describe the logging system implemented in, I think, Vista timeframe. So, but the name kind of stuck, and you can still go out to the internet and search for Panther logs, and you'll get that Microsoft KB article, KB927521, which goes into quite detail. Let me open that up here. It's kind of cool. There it is. No, I don't want to take a survey. Go away. Neg. But it goes into quite detail about different types of logs are available during setup, at the different phases. So when we're in WinPE, for example, we're running in a scenario where there's may not be a C drive. So WinPE, the operating system, will be running on the X drive. Where are the logs there? There's this weird Windows $Windows.bt directory, and that's kind of this temporary directory location where Windows will copy files while it's trying to run some operations, so it doesn't muck on the C/Windows folder. We're kind of looking at that, but it goes into a lot of detail about where to look during different phases. So this is the Bible for where to find particular log files. But in general, for the most part, during most setup, you'll either find it in that C Windows, C $Windows tilde BT directory. That's where we'll start off with in both Windows and WinPE, at least during the very start, before it actually begins installation. Then when it actually begins installation, it goes into what we call OOB setup. OOB setup is when you see that little dialog and the little curly queue. After it reboots into the full OS, and you don't really get the full access to the OS, but it's doing the installation in the background. And then when it's finally done, hopefully it should be either under the C Windows Panther directory or the C Windows System32 Panther directory. Sometimes I just have to search around myself to find those. There are also different phases if you're running sysprep. Sysprep will also use the same Panther configuration and whatnot. But the two log files we're looking for are these setup act, which is the activity log, and the error file. Anytime there's an error, it'll write to the both the action and the error file. But sometimes I'll just look at the act file for, let me give you an example of what that will look like here. I think I have one on this machine. Not this machine. Yes, Explorer, Desktop, Demo, Error, Panther. So we have a an act active and an error log file. But if we open up in the CM tree, there will be on the column over here, column one will be the date, the time that it happened, the info, and then the text here. Info, error, or warning is what we're looking for. And anytime there's an error, it will also get logged to the error file. But these can get quite big. Another note about CM trace, just to let you know, within Windows, if within MDT and Configuration Manager, if there is a warning or an error, they should actually be highlighted as red or yellow. If it's just a .log file and it's not explicitly listed as an error, it'll just search for the word error or warning. So in this case, I think there was a red here. Yeah. This isn't an actually error, but this isn't a catastrophic error, but the word error does appear in the log file here. So it just marked it as red. Additionally, also during Windows setup, there's a couple of subcomponents. CBS log, anytime it has to update components on the component-based servicing log. Anytime it runs a DISM command, runs updates with embedded in your setup program. This could also be helpful. Setupapi.dev, there's a whole class of what to do when driver installations go wrong. Setup API dev, the driver installation logs will be populated during any time during the life cycle of a device driver deployment. But that's almost another whole talk about device driver problems. Net setup, anytime you're having a domain join issue, anytime you're trying to connect up, net setup log is the best place to go to that, and that's the first thing we're gonna ask with domain join. And then, of course, Windows Update.log, at least for the very in-depth, why did these sort of things crash. Of course, that also, for Windows Update, for both Configuration Manager, SUP, and WSUS, in addition to regular Microsoft Windows Update and the Microsoft Update. There are four different systems that use the Windows Update log and that system. When you're in WinPE, there are also a couple of logs there, WinPE int.log and setupapi.dev, of course, the driver installation. Let me give a quick example of what the WinPE log will look like here. I have a virtual machine connected up in Redmond. We'll make sure it looks like it's running. nope, it died. Nope, that's it. But the network's bad. Give it a second here. Nope. Well, during when WinPE starts up, it will go out and, of course, it needs to install the network and install the network drivers, connect it to a DHCP server, and get an IP address. But there's no UI in the background. Typically, when you're having network problems on Windows, it's this taskbar icon at the bottom that says that we have network problems. And we have network problems right now. Desktop, connect again. Nope. All right. So the two main log. So inside that WinPE int.log file, it should tell us when. If there are any particular network error or problems. Anybody who has problems with DHCP errors or they couldn't figure out why Windows isn't starting up, we usually direct them to this WinPE int.log file and see what the actual error was. Pixie booting and WDS. I laugh and chuckle. I must admit, I helped set up and configure all the WDS and PXIe servers that, even within Microsoft IT. Most of the, just to let you know, within Redmond, the main campus where most of Microsoft's R&D is done, most of the servers were actually set up in the other part of the state, Eastern Washington, close to a big data center there. So I never got to see those servers. But still, the performance was pretty good. But I always guess that when I'm setting up a PXIe server or WDS, figure that at least the first two times will fail, you'll have problems, it won't work, they won't respond to addresses, they won't get approved by group policy, configuration manager won't accept that. Figure a little bit of frustration there. Even I have problems with the configuration manager and WDS. The best resource for looking at problems, at least if you're having problems getting approved, having problems getting the true WIM package being sent down, is this KB article, and it's to turn on WDS PXIe logging. There's a lot of verbose, at least on the server side. So typically in most scenarios when you're debugging these, you'll see that get access to the correct server. You'll see on the PXIe boot on your client that, yes, I have found the correct server. There's the IP address. But why isn't that machine actually returning back acknowledge the correct F12 package and continuing on? Typically, most WS server log files available on here through this KB article will tell you, give you little hints about why this is happening. Not approved, we can't find the package to send down, the boot files, that sort of thing. What other component? USMT, user state migration. Again, this is a separate component and it has some log files that will be associated. USMT estimate is used by slightly older versions of USMT for those. Most modern scenarios when you're doing in-place upgrades of a machine, I do recommend doing a hard link migration, but for older machines or cases where it's having problems, they will use, they need the estimate tool to determine if there's enough space on your target or your a target drive to store all the content they actually want to back up. Then capturing logs, restore logs, and the PRG are progress logs that are generated, so you can watch those and see them trace and see how they're doing. Of course, configuration manager, task sequencer. Actually, so just FYI, one of the cool things about MDT is that, one of the things I actually appreciated was that MDT uses the task sequencer engine from configuration manager. It's kind of a small subset. So if you're looking at configuration manager task sequences for installing an operating system and looking at the task sequence for MDT and what these kind of look like, that was by design. Want to make it easy, this small, very light MDT version that's kind of restricted, and then want to make it sure that people feel comfortable moving up to a configuration manager full product that provides a little bit more, features and functionality upgrading. But both systems will use this SMSTS log file to show what we're doing in each one of the, as we're considering on the, running along the task sequence. And again, this also depends on the deployment scenario, where we are, is there a C drive, whatnot. One of the craziest things I've come across, at least in MDT, is when you have multiple drives on a machine. Say, for example, you have a C drive, but the D drive is bigger than the C drive. I know on my laptop here I have a SSD drive for the C drive and a much larger spinning drive for the D drive. The task sequencer uses some internal logic to decide where the log files go, and I think there's some logic in there that says, hey, well, why don't we just put the log files on the drive with the most free space? So if you're going in and looking at log files and there's no C/_SMS task sequence log files on the C drive, where do they go? Well, they could be on the D drive because that's where the more space is. So again, take a look around. Hopefully they should be there. For MDT, there have been a couple of changes, well, not too recently, but while it's running, again, there, MDT will create the mini and T folder for most of the log files. When it's done, MDT will do a capture of all the log files, and of course, hopefully dump them to a network share if you have SL share defined, but it'll also dump it to the C Windows temp deployment logs folder, which is great for debugging. I use my own laptop here, which I have gone through, or find any particular laptop at Microsoft to find, well, just what exactly is or some the status of this, sometimes using some forensic debugging. I wanted to find out why this particular thing wasn't set up. Well, the log files are right there. It's set up, and we can go in and do some investigation in the background. There are a couple of scenarios where MDT will create, we create the BDD log file, which is a cumulative collection of all the log files that were created through one running MDT. And each one of those individual log files, each script that's running, will also have its own component. So if we're running ZTI application, the script, it will create a ZTI applications.log file. So if we know that it crashed somewhere while installing an application, we could just go into that file, and we don't have to go through this huge BDD log file. But there are some other scenarios where we'll create even another log file. ZTI backup is a good example. We're capturing, if we're within the script calling another program, in ZTI backup we're going to be calling ImageX or DISM. We want to capture the contents of that and actually save it to a log file. So there might be some other log files. But hopefully, if done properly, most of the log files should get copied to the C Windows temp deployment logs folder or uploaded anyways, which is kind of what we want to do when looking at the log files at the end. For some of the useful configuration manager log files, a lot of you are aware of these, driver catalog, task sequence. Some of these are, of course, not on client machines, but on the server machines. SMS pixie log is, again, that equivalent of looking at the WDS logs on configuration manager machines. A good collection of the different types of configuration manager logs at the technical article here below. When you're within WinPE and other environments, hopefully most of you know this, but the magic keystrokes to get to the command prompt. When we're in, the classic example is when we're in Windows OOBE or the out-of-box experience setup, Shift F10. If we need to get to a command prompt, we need to actually do some debugging. Or if we're in MDT and Configuration Manager, we've focused on F8. But for Configuration Manager, that's not available by default. You actually need to enable that for in Configuration Manager. There's a little checkbox when you're creating your images to enable the debugging support. I personally like it because I like to know that it's available if things do go wrong. But then again, if you're in a very well-attested environment and you think you got all the kinks worked out, yeah, go ahead and remove it, especially if it's for end users. One other note about the MDT version of F8, one of the tricks to, at least also on Configuration Manager, while that, when if you press F8 and it opens up a command prompt window, while that window is open, the WinPE won't reboot. So if you have some problems in the background, the classic example is if there's a problem in the MDT scripts that are causing the machine to crash, causing the scripts to crash and force a reboot, we could use F8 to stop that. Stop the reboot, start an over and over reboot, and then spend some time actually debugging what the real problem is. All right, let's see here. So let's look at, go back to CM Trace here for a second. How is this doing? Doing better. There we go. So if I open up our WinPE client, there it is. I can press the F8 button. It opens up in the background. So let's look at that. We'll see what kind of log files there are here. Log, Notepad, WPE, PEinit.log. So this is the what happens when PE is being initialized for the first time. It sets the display settings based on your configuration file. It also we can see here. Oh, here it is installing the device driver for I think it's the DEC 21140, which is I think an old adapter, but it's the adapter used by the Hyper-V emulator. And we also see that got a DHCP address assigned. Now, of course, and another interesting thing, it spent 5,000 milliseconds installing network drivers. That's 5 seconds, which is okay, which is good. If we start to see things like spent 300,000 milliseconds installing network drivers, wow, maybe we have some problems here, or spent 0 seconds confirming network initialization, yeah, maybe we were not getting responses back from our DHCP server, but these are some of the tricks and areas I'll look at when doing installation. Additionally, I do have some, let's see here, some log files created that I just, there's sample, there's a BDD log file. Again, one of the, let's see, let's send this with, open with Notepad. This is one of the sample BDD log file, and as you can see, this is one of the problems here is that it is in this Configuration Manager proprietary format, which is, I look at this and I can understand what it is, and I can follow along. I can see that we're running the wizard along here, that the type is regular, and I can see the dime and the date and the log here. But for most people that I ask to look at their BDD log files, they're going to look at this, and it's kind of hard, especially when you're running this in WinPE and the window looks about that big. It's kind of obnoxious. So if we do open up in a configuration manager, again, one of the advantages is that it automatically extracts out all the information, the log text, the component name, the time and the date, the thread, and it also will do an intelligent job of, hey, we found a particular error. This particular line of text was marked as not as a regular text. It was marked as an error, and this is what we actually want to look at right now. But that's one of the advantages of Configuration Manager. This is an example of, at least in the scripting in the background, of what would be created. The log files, just kind of hard to read versus the text as you could view them on the file. So let's go through some an example problems here of what you might expect during a standard installation. Probably the biggest classifications of errors that I've seen lately, and it comes and goes depending on how many service packs there are and patches there are to an operating system, because it always has some fun, is problems during OOBE, during the Windows setup, and trying to parse that unattended.txt file, unattended.xml file. Sorry, I've been at Windows too long, back when they used to use TXT files, INI files. Windows, of course, when we're running through the installation, we create an XML file, and this gets parsed by the setup to determine what to do, everything from the computer name to the destination to the components to be installed. But there are a lot of things that can go wrong with an installation. Give you a little show here. Let's see if my network connection is still running. Yes, okay, for now. If I go down to my MDT server and start that up, super secret password. If you were to go into your task sequence for the OS installation, one of the tabs available under OS info is the ability to modify, edit your unattended XML file. which would start up this Windows System Image Manager. The Windows System Image Manager is part of the ADK, and MDT can call that up and actually use it. But once you start modifying this file, MDT and Configuration Manager release, and MDT with Configuration Manager additions will have a pre-configured unattended XML file that is designed to continue on. You can go ahead and modify that, but once you start modifying that, that can actually cause problems. Maybe you will set a component or a setting that file out doesn't work. You can modify the XML file with a typo and make the XML not correct of some sorts. One of the best techniques, if you do actually use Windows System Image Manager, there's a tool, Validate Answer File. This will give you, hopefully, a quick analysis of at least, is the XML file properly formatted? Are there some basic obvious errors? There are other scenarios where it just won't know until you actually run it. So that actually happens here. One of the biggest problems we do see is within the XML file, there are components that don't exist, that they're looking for sections in the XML file that aren't there or were designed for a previous version, all sorts of problems that can't exist. So do be aware of that when looking at an XML file. If you do modify the XML file, you break it, you pay for it. do be aware of that. Mixed mass project keys. This is kind of more common under older versions of Windows, but still kind of exists here. There are different SKUs for Windows, professional, enterprise, home, that sort of thing. Do be aware that the additions can come back to bite you and can come back and actually cause problems. It will manifest, hopefully it manifests themselves when in the unattended XML file, but do check there. A broken domain join. Here's also a good example of what happens when you modify an XML file by yourself. You might want to go out and actually, you can tell the computer name to be star, which means prompt the user for the computer name during OOB setup. But you may also then specify, oh, well, here's a section for where I can define what domain to join. Let's do that here. Well, what happens is during OOB setup, it will prompt you for the computer name, but not set the full computer name there within OOB setup. Instead, it will try to join to the domain using the old computer name, and then you get into these weird conditions. That's documented as by design in that KB article 944353. But another problem with trying to, you might see some unattended XML file settings and say, hey, let's just go a party round and let's define everything and see what happens. MDT and Configuration Manager were kind of designed to work around most of these obvious problems, so let those systems actually do the heavy lifting for you. Another domain join issues. Mike Niehaus has described this before. This was kind of some odd scenarios of connecting up using OUs. In the MDT and Configuration Manager wizards that allow you to specify OUs to join up when you're connecting up doing a domain join. Typically, in most scenarios, I don't know how you guys do it out in the field in your particular company, you might decide to put all unassigned computers into a standard bucket, and those buckets will get put into the correct OU later, or you can define, no, I have to have this one in this OU right away. I think this particular error was that in this case, there is no CN equals computers OU. That's a container, not a the key learning. Don't specify CN equals computers, leave the OU blank instead. There were some scenarios where Configuration Manager will let that actually pass and let you type that into the computer, but Windows OOB setup will complain when it actually tries to do this. Yeah. There are, let's see, I'm not quite sure, other kind of domain join issues that you might incur. Again, what I mentioned earlier about, you know, you might want to move OUs later on. I have come across, for example, other scenarios where you may have an OU that defines one of those EULAs when you pop up for the first time. You know, press. You must agree to the terms and conditions of the company before you can actually log on. That actually breaks automation. There are some scenarios here where during domain join, you should be aware that putting into OU that doesn't have heavy restrictions that break automation and auto logging during the MDT least task sequence. Configuration Manager doesn't have that problem because it will create a different account and actually doesn't actually log on that way. Again, there are some, you know, the when starting up, how different kind of problems you can have when booting up. Either the driver doesn't load, then you, like a critical boot driver doesn't load, like the storage system, the network driver, other kind of areas where you're looking. Well, have some KB articles here about how to help those Windows critical setup failures. Let's see, let's go actually go in to see how my computer is doing. I did run a setup yesterday. Which one is this? This one, this is not right. Apply. Learning how this setup actually went. Give an example of looking at a machine that was running in the background, and we'll see if this runs. Great, okay, this didn't actually work. So this is a case of we're in OOBE, we're in the, view full screen. Yes, there we go. So we're running OOBE in the background, right now in the foreground, sorry, and Windows setup came back and said, I'm sorry, Windows could not parse or process the unattended answer file. Or for pass specialize, the answer file is invalid. So the unattended XML file has different sections for different phases. There is a section there for WinPE. There's a section for generalized. When you run sysprep, how do you take a machine and make it kind of more generic, generalize it for other uses rather than this, for the current usage. But for right now, during pass specialize, so it's taking a very generic image and trying to customize it for just this specific machine, but it didn't actually work. So let's actually go into our special hotkey here, which is Shift F10. Great, that pops up. Let's see, the Panther logs. Dir, if I could type today, dir Panther. Is there a Panther in this directory? No. Is there a Panther in this directory? There it is, right there. So Panther. Great. So, again, one of the things we're looking for is the setup act and the setup error log file. But as you can see in this case, the setup act and the setup error are zero. I gave a presentation once where this was happening, and I racked my brain about this for a while. It turns out setup error.log file, that the file does actually exist and it actually contains text. In fact, if we look at it now, now the file actually shows. What happens is that the setup engine in the background is still running. It left the open handle for the file and never closed it properly, so the file system never updated the file size. So this is always kind of fun. So let's look at that again. Setup, notepad, setup, act.log. Great, there it is. So scroll down to the bottom, and we can see we have some errors going along here, but and then some other information files. But let's see if we can find out, let's see this last error. Last error, unattended, occurred while, an error occurred while finding and loading an unattended file, and then it just gives an error number. That's no fun at all. Let's go up to another error. Error provided here. Okay, well, how about this one? SMI data dump. Okay, here's a section. So Microsoft Windows Shell Setup, that's a section within the unattended XML file, that's great. Identify the processor architecture and the scope, and wait, oh, here's a section at the end. Settings, computer name. Okay, that gives us a hint about what it could possibly be. In fact, that's probably the best hint here. So how do we figure out what the computer name is? Let's go back to see if the minint directory still exists. And they see there it is right there, minint. So this is a Windows Light Touch installation, SMS OSD, OSD logs. Great, so here's a logging file. So let's, and in this particular case, I did not load up cmtrace into the WinPE file, so we have to use Notepad. What are we looking for? BD log file, great. So actually, let's go back down for a second, first of all. One particular trick, when MDT constructs the unattended XML file, it places this, it places it in the C minint folder. And we could view it here. Oh, we just got it killed. Go back. We can actually go back and look at the unattended XML file that was used by MDT here while it was running. View full screen. Shift F10 again, right in the background. Minint. Notepad. Unattended XML file. Let's go down and see where the computer name is. Computer name is. Fine. Computer. Computer name. Wow, that's a awfully big computer name there. Anybody know what the limits are for the computer name in Windows 7 and 8? 15 characters. I think that's longer than 15 characters. How did that happen? I messed that up. Let's go back to CDS, MSOSD, OSD logs, Notepad, BDD log. One of the cool things is we can actually just do a find search for a computer name. N-A-M-E. My hands are cold up here. All this air conditioning. Computer name is now. So yes, somebody set computer name now is equal to this in the default. Let's see, this is section ZTI gather. So as MDT is running, it's reading the configuration INI file. Somewhere in my INI file, I have the default equals this, default OSD computer name equals this. I think I remember what that is now. In fact, if I was to go down to my MDT server and look at the, let's see here, look at my creation share, look at the properties, the rules. I did make a change. I told it to skip the computer name, the wizard, and I told it to use the OSD computer name equals serial number. Well, just to let you know, if on a local machine, WBEM test, we load up WMI and look at Win32 BIOS, if we were to look at the BIOS settings on this machine, I haven't looked at this machine, but in this case, the serial number is something reasonable. In this case, it's only about 10 characters long. So it's kind of common, and some environments will try to set the computer name equal to the serial number. And for physical machine, that works out great. But for virtual machines, serial number is set to a long GUID, which is kind of what the problem is here. So in this case, I think the workaround might be to change serial number to, you know, we can truncate or chop off only the first 10 characters or something like that or whatnot. So this is my bad. Now, the point of the skip computer name is, in this case, the wizard should have been smart enough to know that, wait a minute, this is too long of a computer name, it would have killed me. So if you're skipping the computer name and you set the computer, if you're skipping the wizard and you set the computer name to something really long, yes, you could have problems, and this is a good example of actually a fairly common error of what actually could happen if you during Windows setup. So There, we actually went to the machine. We brought up F10. We went to look at the CBS logs, the Panther logs. We saw what the particular error was. We went back to the F10 XML file, and that gave us a hint about what section it was. And typically from there, we can actually see what we modified from the original that caused that particular problem. For WinPE, again, what I kind of presented this earlier on about some of the particular problems, but probably some of the biggest problems, at least with WinPE itself, and this goes with regular Windows, this goes with Configuration Manager as well. Take a look at that WPE int file. That used to be more of a common problem, I think, not so much now nowadays, but I know some Cisco routers, for example, with, at least within WinPE, WinPE may not be as forgiving for slow DHCP addresses when they arrive. So there's some documentation, some web blogs about this. Make sure that your Cisco routers have port fast defined in order to make sure that WinPE gets that DHCP address in a reasonable amount of time. But again, use that logging tool to find what the particular errors are. One thing that I do want to talk about, MDT, sometimes when you're going along here, you'll actually see this red screen. It's actually salmon colored. I'm red-green colorblind, so I think I thought this was like red, but it's more technically called salmon color. One of the most common errors that you will get, at least within MDT, is what happens when you get this 8.0.0.0.4.0.0.5, which basically means generic error. This is fairly common within MDT, and what happens is there's a red screen, and I could go forwards here. There's also a yellow screen that happens as well. What's the difference between a red and a yellow screen? Well, and then the white screen is when everything happens is correct. Yellow means that at the very end, this wizard that displays deployment summary went through the BDD log file and looked for every single line and tried to find anyone that was not an info, just an error or a warning. If it found any, yeah, that's it will display the yellow. I've had cases where people will usually send snapshots of this yellow screen, but what I really need is the BDD log file, because this yellow screen actually reads the BDD log file to generate this content, but what I really need is the log file. So please do send the log file. So what does this mean when we actually run it? And let me go back to a slide here. Error, the red screen means that when we're running through the task sequence, which is just a sequence of tasks, one of the scripts in there exited incorrectly. And if you have this continue on error, if you don't have it defined, the task sequence will stop, and MDD considers that a catastrophic failure. I can't continue. I don't know what's going on. This is bad. You can define your own. Typically, what happens is when people will add in their own steps into the task sequence, the state restore. I have my own custom script. I have my own thing to add in here. And maybe your script will output some errors every once in a while. Let's just show you what that looks like here. I do have a log file as an example. So when we're running, BD log will start up and we'll do a wrapper. LightTouch is the script that will actually manage all of the installations and the environment. But at the end of the LightTouch here, we were running ZTI applications. We exit out into the LightTouch script and pow, there's that LightTouch deployment failed, error code, whatever. Whenever you see this, for more information, consult the task sequencer log, SMSTS log file. If you have the SL share dynamic logging defined, yeah, it should still be there. And here it is in this case. So as I mentioned earlier, we were running the ZTI application script, and right after that, another step. So here, the standalone task sequencer is running along all the individual steps. We can see that it's actually kicking off C script, ZTI applications, and it has all this internal logic for showing where it's next in the steps, what step it's running, whether a particular group should be run. There's also sort of custom logic here. And then we get down to this custom step, which is, in this case, I just wrote a cmd.exe with a exit1. So run the command prompt, and then immediately exit with an error code of 1. Now, in my task sequence, I defined it do not continue on error, so pow, that is a break. Common example of this might be robocopy. Most programs will return back an error code of 0 if it was successful. But robocopy, yeah, they were being clever. What they decided to do is if it was successful in certain cases, it would return back a 3. And if it was successful and it returned back a lot of files, a 4. There are several different cases where a 3 or a 4 or a 5, were, if you get that error code, it's correct. That's perfectly valid. Robocopy actually ran the command. So if you add robocopy into your task sequence, you have to be aware of that. Most people will go ahead and create a script to wrap around that and call robocopy, extract the error code 03. Well, that's actually a success. Continue on. Or mark in the task sequence that the just continue on error if you do receive that. The error in this case is perfectly acceptable. We don't care. Task sequences. Again, what I mentioned earlier that the unattended XML file has been predefined for both Configuration Manager and for MDT to continue. One of the steps in the unattended XML file that's been predefined is during OOB setup, run a command to tell it to continue running MDT after you reboot. If you're using your own unattended XML file that's been built from scratch, it may not have that section, that hook in there for MDT to, and Configuration Manager to continue running. Also, if you don't sysprep your image, so if you were to take a standardized image and not sysprep it, it won't run, interpret, parse through the unattended XML file during installation. Then, when it gets boots up for the first time, MD says the OS says, "Now, what am I supposed to do? The OS is up and running, and I have no instructions to continue running." Do be careful when modifying the unattended XML file to make sure that you leave those MDT hooks in there, and also be aware of the that you do need to sysprep a machine. Be getting a lot of complaints about that lately on the forums. Dirty environment. This is kind of a odd case. We kind of added it in there around, I think, MDT 20, 2010 or something like that. But there are some scenarios. The problem with the task sequences are that they only run sequentially. They run one after the other. They don't actually. You can't actually go back and rerun a section. You can only go forwards through the task sequence. So what happens if we ran a step to install the operating system, and then the next step was to continue going, but for some reason we detected that we jumped back to the very beginning of WinPE setup again? Wow, now we're in this weird state. We don't know how we got here. There's something catastrophic. That's what the dirty environment found was. That we detected that there's a task sequence in progress, but we don't actually know what to continue. You can go ahead and click no if you know what you're doing, and maybe we'll continue. But whenever I see this, first thing I do, yes, let's kill it. Let's restart from scratch. I don't know what happened. This is kind of an odd state. There also were some scenarios, I think, where when you upgraded from previous versions to MDT 2012 or 2013, that we did. This problem was more profound or occurred more often. This is kind of a new one here with MDT, at least with Configuration Manager add-on. OSD preserved drive letter. I kind of apologize for this. This was kind of something that we've been tracking for a while, but it's one of these weird, this is kind of by design, kind of. sort of a thing, and MDT kind of had it working at the time, but kind of not. I don't know how else to describe this. Frank Rojas has an excellent article about all the details of this. This was huge. Well, basically, what happens is when you use Configuration Manager with MDT add-ons, strictly as is without any modifications, you might find that your OS pops up and pow, you're running Windows on the D drive. How did that happen? There's some history behind that, at least when they started making it Windows in the build lab, that they, for the Windows product groups, that they would build, capture Windows from the D drive for historical reasons. Configuration Manager added on some fixes around that, which caused some other repercussions down the road. And then they tried to add another feature on OSD Preserved Drive Letter. There are some details about that, OSD Preserved Drive Letter. So do be aware that, at least within MDT, OSD Preserved Drive Letter can cause some problems and can cause D drive. But these blogs, just search for that, should help guide you for what the how to work around those issues. Catalog generation errors in MDT and elsewhere. Again, I showed you earlier when going into the Windows System Imaging Manager, we can go ahead and use that as a tool to modify the unattended XML file. But when you do that, we'll first try to generate the catalog. We do need the servicing stacks for that particular architecture that you're trying to modify. Each unattended XML file is either designed for x64 or x86. But if you're trying to modify an X64 or on an X86 or vice versa, we still need the servicing stack. So do be aware that if you, the key learning here is that if you are running, trying to modify an X86 unattended XML file, you may have to be on X86 OS to do that. Not just the X86 version of the Windows system, the WISM tool, but the actual OS itself. All right, a couple of CM errors here. That wonderful 8.0.0.0.4.0.0.5, as we learned previously from the MDT example, that is a case where during installation there's some sort of generic error that we could see that there was a failure within the task sequence. But again, it's just one of the SIPs failed. It happens. Again, the SMSTS lock is your friend. There was a comment, I think Johan described that yesterday for those of you who went to the Configuration Manager session about log files being of a certain size over 1 megabyte or 2 megabytes in size. Do be aware of the sizes of the files and the contents there. Again, use CMTrace, Trace32 for grabbing things. Another point, that's actually a good point, the 8.0.0.4.0.5 comes back as a generic error, or on some systems may come back as access denied. If you get one of these overly generic error messages translated from an error number, don't trust it. Keep digging in there. Try to find something that's a little bit more realistic and contains some more information there. There's the Windows D installation as well. That's another slide there. There are some other cases of hash mishmashes. Sorry. There are some cases where if you were, I think Johan described this yesterday, maybe he didn't. Do be aware that if you are updating your packages and if they're not going down properly, you may get different distribution points that have mix-match versions. So do be aware that just update it if you're going to make sure to download all your distribution points. Again, updating into different distribution points there. As for Pixie issues, I think we described a little bit about that with PortFast, but there are, like I said, I almost always have problems with Pixie servers, at least on Configuration Manager as well, and it takes me a couple of times. don't think we quite have time for a demo here, but do be aware that the SMS Pixie log, make sure all your packages. There is a particular option available for when you're creating your WinPE images. Make sure you do specify that they are supposed to go to Pixie servers, and make sure you follow the documentation and the steps. There are some good guides out there on the internet for how to set up Pixie, and it should be good. Most of the other issues with some troubleshooting notes along with Pixie as well for how to configure and run through that. Yeah, let's skip that. I do have some additional notes here. One of the cool things about being a MSDN customer is you do have support incidents available through Microsoft support. Windows, MDT, Configuration Manager are fully supported by Windows product support services. Please call them up if you have any questions. Actually, there's some Frank Rojas, who wrote that excellent article on OSD Preserve Drive Letter, works for Configuration Manager support team. Great guy. He's very technically detailed. If you go to that blog, you'll be overwhelmed with the technical knowledge that is presented in there. And he's very detailed oriented, and so is the rest of the guys on the team. But there's also a couple of forums available. Again, I do try to moderate and go to the MDT aliases, but there are also very good Configuration Manager aliases. Most of the MVPs that you saw up on stage yesterday will go and monitor the Configuration Manager OSD aliases forums on the TechNet. So that's probably one of your best places to go to. Another point, if you do have problems and you think it's somewhere in your BDD log file, please use a public site like SkyDrive and post the link to the log file. If you copy and paste, cut and paste those big log files to the forums, it's kind of pretty big there. And there's also an MDT OSD mailing alias at MyIT Forum. MyIT Forum is a great site, and in fact, they have a booth downstairs that they're answering some questions. They have a good site, and I know Mike Niehaus and I also will monitor those aliases if there are really tough problems, and they really do get answered there as well. Additionally, there are some sessions and tracks available here at the Tech Ed. Please fill out some your surveys when you get a chance. And I will be up here for a little bit. We'll also be walking around. But again, hopefully I'll see most of you on the TechNet social sites. Thanks.